Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. Welcome back once again. It is the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. This is the show. We don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And there's so many big things that I want to talk about that I cannot talk about. I can't talk about them, and so I feel like I'm constrained. I got a lot I want to get off my chest, but I can't. It cannot be spoken of. And so I'll have to speak about things I can speak of. Like Mysteries at the Museum. Have you guys seen this show? This is one of the shows that my extremely attractive audio engineer and we watch. It's guaranteed to put her to sleep within 11 minutes. 11 minutes, she will be asleep. But I was watching. You may have missed this, so I'll update you. As you may have. They had a show the other night where they documented a consortium of car makers back in the early 20th century started mysteriously buying up streetcar lines in major cities across the country. And it turns out that these car makers, including General Motors, had a plan to push people into the buses they manufactured. Oh, okay. And eventually their most diabolical plan was to push Americans into private cars.
It worked.
And vehicles. And imagine that, it worked. Their diabolical plan worked so well that every kid in America, when that kid turns 15 years old, they're thinking about one thing and one thing only. What kind of car am I going to get? What am I going to drive? I'm going to get a car. So obviously we would all much rather ride the bus or ride an electrified streetcar, but the powers that be early in the 20th century steered us all into owning our own cars against our own free will. That was just weird, that's all. How long has it been? I'm trying to think of the last time I rode a bus. Last time I rode a bus. Well, it was probably at some trade show where I had to go to the... But the last time I rode a commercial bus with civilians was probably in Japan. A lot of people ride the bus in Japan. But in America, I don't think it took a whole lot of effort to steer us toward owning our own cars. And then there was the diabolical building of the interstate freeway system designed to mind control, steer us into buying our own cars. And here we are, just a bunch of lemmings driving our own. I traveled last week. I had to travel briefly out of town. I flew. I decided not to rent a car, because I knew I wouldn't have to get around much, and I felt like I was in prison. And it turns out, between taxis and Uber and the room service I had to order because I couldn't get to a restaurant, I should have rented a car. I probably would have saved $20, $30 if I would have rented a car, just on the room service alone. I mean it. Anyway, I feel like I'm in prison when I don't have a car. And people back east, they don't really understand that. I think a lot of people don't understand that. It could be that I have a problem. It might be. Anyway, renting a car doesn't cost that much, and it just gives me... I had some friends on September 11th. They were out of town, sales associates of mine, and they were doing some work out of town, and suddenly they could not fly home because September 11th happened. And then they went to rent a car. They couldn't rent a car because all the cars were rented. And I believe they ended up buying a car just to get out of town. Yeah, if I remember the story correctly, they ended up buying a car so they could get home.
The car
salesman. That was the mind control. They could have ridden a Greyhound bus, but instead they spent a couple $1,000 and bought a car. Anyway, I suppose my mind is controlled as anybody else's out there. Anyway, I got an email from a listener this week, one of the tens of thousands of emails that we screen. Very few of them make it through. But this particular listener talked about a story about a drug company raising the price on, I believe it was this EpiPen. Have you heard of this? The price of the EpiPen has apparently increased about 600% over the last decade. And one of our listeners said, Doug, these drug companies, they buy the rights to a drug, they jack up the price. It seems immoral. Is there something the government should do about this? And I thought about it for 5 or 6 seconds, and I said no. I replied, no, the government shouldn't do something about this. This is why the free market must be restrained by Christian love. If we love one another, we won't jack up the price on drugs to an exorbitant and ridiculous fee for these drugs. But without love, the free market is, well, it can be evil and cruel. But it's not the government's place to regulate prices of anything. It should be an understanding between neighbors. And so if the market were restrained, if these drug companies were constrained and restrained by Christian love, they wouldn't do that. At least not to the degree that it becomes, I mean, I don't understand why the price of that thing has gone up so high. I haven't looked into it. But I've seen this happen with a number of drugs. And no, the government doesn't need to pass laws enforcing love or humanity on people. They need to actually learn that, be taught that, and live that, and have that in their hearts. And Christian love is one of the best vehicles for just that, a much better vehicle than is legislation. So we've cleared that one up. So now let us get into the news of the week. Things I am allowed to talk about, but things that could get me killed, I guess. Or at least it could get my website taken down. You remember last week I talked about the leaks of George Soros' Open Society board meetings. These documents were leaked. Well, they were very embarrassing to Mr. Soros. Mr. Soros doesn't like to be embarrassed. And apparently DC Leaks, the website that released that information, according to the Daily Caller, the website, that whole section of their website is gone, disappeared. And DC Leaks' Twitter account has been suspended. Although by the time I go to air today, it may be back up. But there are serious powers that be. There was a rumor that someone tried to get into the embassy to kill that pasty-faced homo from WikiLeaks. What's his name? Julian Assange. I believe he's holed up in the Ecuadorian... Is it the Ecuadorian embassy in somewhere, or is it the somewhere embassy in Ecuador? I'm not sure. The embassy, the Ecuadorian embassy in Switzerland, is it? Or is it the Swiss embassy in Ecuador? I can't recall. But someone was caught scaling the wall, like dressed in black, killed Julian Assange before he dumps all these emails on Hillary. I'm glad I didn't hack her. I wouldn't want to put my family at risk, that's for sure. So anyway, we'll see if DC Leaks goes back up. I actually never heard of DC Leaks. I didn't know it was them. Congratulations. Thank you very much. I hope that Soros does not have you killed. Which begs the question, which I thought last week was probably too ridiculous to ask, but this week I'm going to ask it. We should take a poll. I should get the poll monkey on my website. We should take polls.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I could be the Frank Luntz of conservative talk. I could be Frank Luntz, but I don't have to look like a slob. That you put that guy in a $5,000 suit. He looks like he just rolled out of bed. What's up with that guy? But here's our poll question for the week, kids. Is it possible that Hillary Clinton will try to have Donald Trump killed before the election? And if so, do you think she would be prosecuted for it? Would she even be questioned under oath? Now, it is pretty ridiculous, right? And I am only joking. There's no way I think Hillary would ever even think about having anyone even hurt, let alone killed. That's beyond the pale. But I wanted to ask the question, because, I just don't think it's as ridiculous this week as it was last week. And we'll see how it goes here. We'll see how Mr. Trump does.
Oh, wait, Putin's good at it, too.
Putin, they found a, as a matter of fact, speaking of Vladimir, there is a well-known critic of Vladimir Putin in the media was found dead in his apartment in Kiev on his birthday this past week.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Shot in the head. Yeah.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
And then is it Trump ties with him or not?
Well, Trump and, well, if you listen to Hillary, Trump and Putin are best buddies, so.
Okay. So
if here's the thing, if Trump is killed, we'll know it was not Putin. More than likely, much more likely that it would be someone associated with Hillary and Soros and that whole machine than it would be. Now, speaking of that whole machine, let's go to the money file, because there's been a meeting going on up in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Central bankers are meeting there in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. It's the only nice part of Wyoming, from what I understand. If you, it's named Hole, yeah, Jackson Hole. It's anyway. If you've not been to Wyoming, it's very similar to the surface of Mars in Wyoming, and the wind is almost as strong on Mars as it is in Wyoming. One of my early jobs in my career was to hang siding on houses. And I remember the wind must be blowing 30 to 60 miles an hour all day, every day on this house up in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And I'm the flunky. I have to take the planks and I have to lay them out on the table and I have to cut them to size. And I just remember. So the wind in Wyoming is burned into my memory. I remember that. Chasing down panels of siding flying through the air before they killed someone. But anyway, the central bankers, for whatever reason, have chosen Jackson Hole. I think Jackson Hole is a deep enough place in Wyoming that the wind is reasonable. And so there, and there, I believe there's a water supply, which is unusual for Wyoming. And so it's a nice place. And the central bankers have been meeting there for their big meeting. A three-day conference was held there. And the basic sense of the meeting is, let's see here. The broad sense at the Jackson Hole meeting of central bankers, by the way, this includes European Central Bank, Federal Reserve Bank, Bank of Japan. Where's Deutsche Bank? Deutsche Bank is not here. Well, I guess it was only these three. Anyway, the general broad sense at the meeting is that the other side of government may need to up its game. The plea from the central bankers to their colleagues in the government, Reuters calls them, their colleagues in the government, is that we need your help. The central bankers are asking their colleagues in government for help. But am I mistaken? I thought the central banks were private banks. I know the Federal Reserve is a private bank. So how can they be asking their colleagues in government for help if they're actually a private bank? I think it's because the reporters at Reuters, they don't even know what they're talking about. Or they want to lead all of us to believe that these central banks are actually government institutions, which they are not. They are private banks. And saying that they're too big to fail, by the way, they go on in this article. I'll post a link. The Reuters article talks about how no matter what these bankers have tried, the economy just languishes and sputters. And it's really lousy in Japan. It's lousy in Europe. It's so lousy in Japan, they're thinking about opening up immigration, which is very not Japanese. It's shocking to the Japanese sensibilities that they would think about opening their doors to immigrants. But none of them are having any kids. The economy's in the toilet, and they're actually thinking maybe. Maybe we need to import some productive people. So the whole article talks about how difficult it's been for these central bankers. But I think it's because, why has the economy languished so poorly for the past 8 or 9 years? Is that the minute the government said that any of these institutions were too big to fail, that meant that these banks would be allowed to live and even grow and prosper to some degree, but it would be a long, slow death for the rest of us, at least economically speaking. Instead of a quick and painful death for these institutions, which I understand it would be painful, But it would be quick. And then from that, free men can recover. Because after all, we're all neighbors. We're all in this together. We're not going to start cannibalizing each other. We would figure it out. It's just money. We would get over it. Now, these big institutions, they may lose a lot. These bankers might lose their mansions and their Rolls Royces. And yeah, that could happen. It would be very sad to see that happen. But we would all get over it. And we would see the reemergence of a free market. And hopefully it would be directed and constrained in Christian love.
When the lights go down in the city and the sun shines on the bay, ooh, I wanna be there in my city. Oh, 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 oh,
it would just be a dawning of a new day is what it would be. A dawning of a new day, I said. Yes, yes. It wouldn't be the end of the world if the Federal Reserve tanked. It would be difficult. It would be painful, but I would figure out a way to get over it. And I can help all of you. If you're scared, we can do this together. Don't be afraid. Now, let's move on into the politics file because I'm a quarter of the way into the show. I've only done, my goodness. And there's so much news this week. Huma Abedin worked for a radical Muslim journal for 10 years, even while she was an intern for Hillary Clinton. She was an intern at the same time as Monica Lewinsky. Did you know that? In the same administration, as a matter of fact. A different wing, though. From what I understand, Hill and Bill, they kind of had separate quarters, so to speak. Anyway, Huma, who is Clinton's top campaign ad, according to the New York Post, and may even be the future White House chief of staff. Now let that sink in for a minute. Edited a radical Muslim publication that opposed women's rights and blamed America for 9/11. This is the woman closest to the woman who could be the first woman to be the president of the United States, which is somewhat disconcerting. She was an assistant editor of the Journal of Muslim Minority Affairs, and she worked for her mother, who to this day remains editor-in-chief, but that doesn't matter. People don't really have relationships with their mothers in politics. You know, it's not like they talk, right? She was also working in the White House as an intern for First Lady Hillary Clinton back when she was First Lady. That's just, if you weren't scared before, it's okay to be scared now. Okay, forget the banks. The Muslim sisterhood could be setting up shop in the White House. Meanwhile, let's go back. Join me, kids, in the Wayback Machine. We're going to go back to the days when Vince Foster was found with clean shoes in Fort Marcy Park with a bullet in his brain. Actually, the bullet went through his brain, but it was never found, oddly enough. Anyway, Ron Kessler. He's an author. He's written a number of books. I don't know if he's a leftist or a rightist. He's a journalist, so I assume he's a leftist, at least if you were to compare him to me. But that's almost everybody. But Ron Kessler is a well-known quantity in journalism. And he says on two separate occasions he visited the National Archives and to review works generated by FBI agents assigned to investigate the 1993 death of Bill Clinton. I almost said Bill Cosby. Bill Cosby's deputy White House counsel, Vince Foster. No, I know it's. I meant Bill Clinton. You all know what I mean. All right, so Vince Foster is found with no dirt on his shoes in Fort Marcy Park with a bullet through his head, the vanishing magic bullet. Well, on the first visit to the National Archives, Kessler says that the archivist provided a box of records that he said contained FBI reports of interviews conducted by FBI agents regarding Foster's death. Well, Kessler made a second visit. The archivist provided what he said was the same documents, but the reports on Hillary Clinton's role in the death of Vince Foster were absent. And as far as we know, these reports now remain absent, not unlike the bullet that went through Vince Foster's head. It's just gone. Just vanished. Magic Shazam. So this fella Kessler wrote a book, The First Family Detail, Secret Service Agents Reveal the Hidden Lives of the Presidents. Well, in that book, FBI agents revealed the truth about Foster's death on July 20th, 1993. Kessler says his death on July 20th, 1993, when he shot himself at Fort Marcy Park. The idea that Vince Foster shot himself at Fort Marcy Park is ridiculous. But we'll let that slide. He says that White House aides and Foster's friends said that about a week before Foster's death, Hillary held a meeting at the White House with Foster and other aides to discuss Hillary's health care legislation. And Hillary put him down at the meeting. She told Vince Foster he didn't get the picture and he would always be a little Hicktown lawyer who was not ready for the big time. And she said this as she blamed him for all the problems they were having with her monstrosity of a health care plan. She accused him of failing her and Bill in front of the whole room of people. So she embarrassed him in front of all of his colleagues. His friends say he was profoundly depressed, and Hillary's lambasting was the final straw. She publicly embarrassed him in front of others. Foster's behavior, according to these FBI reports, they interviewed a bunch of people. His behavior changed dramatically. His voice sounded strained. He became withdrawn and preoccupied. They say his sense of humor vanished. By the way, these are all signs of a suicidal person. Textbook signs. His sense of humor vanished, right? If you read books on warning signs, that's one of the big ones. So anyway, Ken Starr, you'll remember, issued a 38,000-word report, but he never mentioned the meeting with Hillary, and he left out the fact that his own investigation had found that Hillary's rage had likely led to her friend's suicide. And it's amazing that Hillary Clinton could be the nominee with all of this baggage. And the fact that she basically took a body out of the White House and dumped it in the park. I don't know if she did it personally, but I mean, the fact that she arranged to have that happen and got away with it is astounding to me. But all the evidence indicates that that's what happened. And now the evidence is disappearing. It's been disappeared. All right. So what does that mean? I don't know. That's just possibly the next president of the United States. That's all. Just digest that, I guess. Now we'll go into the treason right in your face file. The Free Beacon reports that the Barry Ho administration is withholding from Congress details about how it paid $1.3 billion in U.S. taxpayer funds to Iran, the sworn enemy of the country they call the Great Satan. That's us. The Ho administration has admitted that the $400 million cash delivery to Iran was part of an effort to secure the release of American hostages. We've all talked about this, that the president paid a ransom for hostages, and what does it mean? What does it matter? Nothing. What difference does it make at this point? Well, apparently it doesn't make a difference. Apparently the president of the United States can pay a ransom to Muslim fanatic, suicidal terrorist state, and there's no consequences, none. Everybody just yawns. Now, there's been an investigative reporter named Claudia Rosette. She recently disclosed that the Treasury Department transferred three payments to the Treasury Department. I'm sorry. Let's see here. I want to get this right. The Treasury Department transferred three payments to the State Department in 13 large identical sums. 13 transfers of $99,999,999.99. 13 individual transfers from the Treasury to State, and that happens to match the $1.3 billion that these traitors claim that we owe Iran in this settlement. So they've basically smuggled over $1 billion out of the country somehow. And is anybody going to ask questions? Is there going to be any consequences for anyone for any of this? Let's say Donald Trump is elected. Is he going to get to the bottom of this? No, he's not going to get to the bottom of any of this. No, we are living in a post-constitutional, post-Christian age. And, well, the things are not governed any longer in the spirit of Christian love. And Christian love, by the way, demands justice for treason, for crimes. Christian love has all of that involved. And since we've thrown off the restraints of Christian love, well, good luck, people. I'm telling you, that is not going to end well. Right? Do you remember the guillotines in the French Revolution? Well, technology has significantly advanced since then. So good luck with all of that. Now, let's go to an example of government and an example of how a liberal, fanatical activist is proving that Republican governors are cowards and they're liars. Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe. Now, you and I, if you're as old as I am and you go back and you've been paying attention, you remember that Terry McAuliffe was a shill for the Clintons. He was, I don't know if he was a pollster. I think he was their campaign director, fundraiser, bundler, bagman. This guy's now the governor of the state of Virginia, the cradle of Western civilization in the United States of America. Virginia. Terry McAuliffe is the governor. Just let that sink in for a minute. Well, Terry McAuliffe was ordered by the courts last year. He wanted to give voting rights to felons. Well, the state court prevented him from unilaterally using the governor's clemency authority to provide en masse clearance for about 200,000 Virginia felons so they could vote. So the court came and struck down the governor's effort to grant voter rights to felons. So what did Terry McAuliffe do? Did he bow before the court and say, well, there's nothing I can do. The courts are the final authority. Well, here's what Terry McAuliffe has done. Instead of following the court's opinion, Terry McAuliffe has begun a process during which he is individually clearing these felons and giving them their voting rights back. So while the court insists they struck down his earlier order to automatically restore voters' rights for felons, McAuliffe says, well, I don't think you struck it down. And McAuliffe is exercising the power of the governor to do what the governor deems right and correct, despite the opinion of the state court. So this should be a lesson to you gullible pro-life Republicans, and not even just pro-lifers, but all of us who've been told by Republicans that there's just nothing we can do. The court has spoken. Our hands are tied. Our shoulders are sloped. We are supine before the court. Thank you, sir. May I have another? They tell you there's nothing they can do. There is something they can do. Terry McAuliffe proves it, that a governor is not a slave to the court. If he's willing to risk his political capital in order to enforce his will, a governor can do just that. And in the case of the maniacal United States Supreme Court and some of their outrageous rulings over the past few decades, it's time for at least one governor to stand up and say no further. In fact, I'm going to roll this back starting right now. I'm a hero. I'm back. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. That bumper was endorsed solely and only by my extremely attractive audio engineer, as that type of thing typically is not allowed around here. But we'll let it slide because of her attractiveness. She gets away with a lot because of that. Now, so anyway, you governors who tell us that the court has ruled that we have to be allowed to kill babies, the court has ruled that marriage is not a man and a woman, that it can be anything, a freak and a dog and a clown and two homos in a gay bar. No. If I'm the governor, I'm going to stand up and say, well, I appreciate your opinion, but I'm going to find a way to defy you. Because you're insane. You want to legalize the murder of innocent people? You want to say that marriage is not one man and one woman for life? You're insane. I'm not going to allow that to stand out in my state. And if that means eventually we have, well, hopefully it would all end peacefully, right? I don't want to even go there. But somebody has to stand up and be willing to at least risk their political career for crying out loud. These governors, these Republican governors, what's going to happen if you lost your job because you defied the court? What, are you going to be destitute for the rest of your life? You're going to go on speaking tours. You're going to write books. What? What are you going to lose, you cowards? You filthy, lying cowards. You make me sick. All of you. Republicans. Just disgusting. Here's where it's gotten, because the Republicans bamboozled us all 40 years ago and said that the courts had the right to say that we could butcher innocent people. Well, listen to this. In Albuquerque, New Mexico, the Christian Newswire reports that a chancellor at the University of Mexico has acknowledged on film that a staff member acquired the brains of aborted babies for use in dissection at a high school summer camp for the high school kiddos. Dr. Paul Roth, the chancellor and the dean of the School of Medicine at the University of New Mexico, glibly talks on this video. I'll put up a link. It's from the New Mexico Alliance for Life. He glibly says, yes, we had a faculty member who obtained some tissue during one of the summer workshops, dissected, I think, you know, one or two fetal brains, just in passing, you know, fetal brains is what they were, just, you know, summer camp. Have to keep the students busy. So here we have the dean of the School of Medicine talking glibly about dissecting the brains of innocent people that were murdered under the authority, the armed authority of the state of New Mexico. These babies, by the way, the infants described included infants with clubbed feet, aborted at 16 weeks, a 22-and-a-half-week infant with Down syndrome, a 20-week pair of twins with intact brains, a 25-week-old female with an orofacial cleft, and another 30-week intact infant. These are the tissues that were collected by the University of New Mexico. These are the people who were murdered by the state of New Mexico and the, well, anyway, it's just shocking that we've come to this. You're telling me that a rational, reasonable governor couldn't stand up and stop this? Anyway, I cannot even think. This should be shocking to everyone, but this is just another day in the life. Apparently, there is a committee investigating all of this. There are committees all over the country investigating all these baby body parts that we've all been hearing about for about a year and a half. And what has changed? What has happened? Have heads rolled? No, nothing has changed. Nothing has happened. You know why? Is because everybody's focusing on the fact that this facility, for example, this story, they say the Republicans there in New Mexico, they say they want a criminal referral over the fact that the University of New Mexico is working with a local abortion facility, and that violates federal rules that are in place to prevent, quote, too close of a relationship between abortion facilities and researchers. So these Republican lying cowards say that now we have to focus on the fact that these people didn't follow the rules in place for murdering and dissecting innocent people for research. We have rules for that kind of thing. These people violated that rules. That these people violated those rules. Therefore, what? You're already letting them by with the murder of the innocent children. Now you expect anyone to get upset about how they deal in their body parts? Are you people insane? No, you're cowards. You're lying cowards. Afraid to stand up and risk even your political career for the innocent life of even one person. You filthy, lying cowards. Anyway, this idea of focusing on the fact that these body parts were traded and rules were bent and rules were broken, this is a counterproductive tactic. This has been taken on recently by the pro-life industry. The hacks, the regulators in the industry, the National Right to Life, the Operation Rescues, Lila Rose, all the industry hacks want to focus on the fact that these people are breaking rules about how they butcher and sell innocent people. Do you think you can shock people with late-term babies in their body parts when you've already undermined the very personhood of the most youngest unborn people being killed? Are you people idiots? The politicians are cowards, and the so-called 501c3 charities that have built up around the pro-life movement are hollow, empty, vacuous, counterproductive money changers is all they are. And meanwhile, another million innocent people will be killed this year, maybe two now that we've got the abortion pills out there for all the little high school girls. Go get them over the counter. It's the personhood of the unborn person. If we can't focus people on the fact of the humanity of these people being slaughtered, dissected, and sold, then there's no point in arguing about the rules about how we do that. You're wasting your time. Nothing is shocking when you allow for murder at the beginning of the conversation. You're not going to shock anybody after that. You fools! Now, let's talk about the value of human life. We go to the domestic tranquility file. Dateline Chicago, as usual. Chicago police have arrested two men in connection with the death of Nikia Aldridge. Nikia Aldridge is a woman in Chicago. She was pushing her infant child in a stroller on the city's south side last Thursday when several men started shooting. One of the bullets struck Aldridge in the head. She died later at the hospital. The child, a three-week-old, was not hurt. Two brothers, Darwin Sorrells and Darren Sorrells, have been charged with first-degree murder. So, people called Donald Trump a racist last week, a couple weeks ago, because he said, if you're black in America, you walk down the street, you get shot. And I listened to these liberal talking heads on CNN and other news outlets talking about the fact that no white man has the right to ever say that. You're black, you walk down the street, you get shot. Well, here's a woman, black woman, walking down the street, and she got shot. So don't tell me I'm not allowed to say that because I'm white. I'm not allowed to tell the truth because I'm white. Well, just because you're black, you're not allowed to deny the truth and live in a fantasy world. I'm not going to let you get by with that. I have no guilt about being white. I never owned a slave. So get out of here with that. Tell your story walking. By the way, this woman, nobody would care about this woman, by the way. This would never make even a blip in the news in Chicago because innocent women and children are shot and killed every day in Chicago. I bet this would not have made the front page of the Chicago Tribune if it were not for the fact that this woman happens to be the cousin of a basketball player named Dwayne Wade from the NBA. Otherwise, this woman, her death, she would have died in anonymity. Nobody would have cared. Nobody would have even shed a tear outside of her own circle of friends. But this should shock the nation. Everyone in the nation should stop what we're doing when we read this and be utterly shocked. But you know what? We're not shocked. We're incapable of being shocked anymore because our tolerance for murder and bloodshed is really, really high. We have a really high tolerance for it because somehow we've been convinced that a certain level is tolerable. And that is not going to end well. So both of these guys are, these brothers, both, Darren, the one brother, he's a documented member of the Gangster Disciples. He was out of prison on parole. His brother was also out on parole. These men should be tried within a week and executed. And they should have never been on the streets. Never. They should have been on trial or in a grave. The Gangster Disciples. Police, according to CNN, police have not said why the shootings occurred, so I will. If the police aren't willing to say it, I will. The catch-and-release program for violent felons that the police are forced to administer is exactly why this shooting happened. Why does this policy exist? Why do we have a catch-and-release policy for violent felons? It's because the government cannot warehouse enough of these evil people being produced by a culture of fatherlessness, drunkenness, and pornography. That's why this shooting happened. A culture of fatherlessness, drunkenness, and pornography leads to so many evil people that you just cannot warehouse them. And since we've decided that as a society, we no longer have the moral authority to execute murderers, we catch them, we release them, and they kill the mothers of our children. Walking down the street in Chicago, they get shot. That's why, just in case you were wondering. And it upsets me a great deal, by the way. You may not be able to tell, but I'm very upset about things like this. Meanwhile, Reuters reports that in Chicago, there are 90 shootings a week. Homicides are on track to hit their highest levels in Chicago since 97. Last year, there were 480 murders in Chicago. Less than half of them were solved. And now the number of detectives in Chicago is on the decline. People are getting out of the police force in Chicago because who wants to live that? That's living in hell. To be a homicide detective in Chicago is to live in a version of life as close to hell as anyone can imagine. And so the number of officers is declining significantly. Meanwhile, the high number of cases per detective is making it virtually impossible to solve many of these crimes. And the witnesses mistrust the police, number one. The witnesses to these murders. Because I guarantee you, somebody knows exactly what happened with this case and the other 480 murders, the 200 and some odd that haven't been solved. Someone knows exactly what happened. But it appears that witnesses not only mistrust the police, but they fear retaliation from gangs. So this is hell on earth. If you've ever wondered what hell is like, when you can't trust the police and gangs are on the street and you're afraid to walk down the street because you might get shot, that's what hell is going to be like. And it's happening right now on the south side of Chicago. And this is a recipe cooked up for us by progressive activists and cowardly Republicans and even more cowardly pastors and teachers and cultural leaders. And it is a recipe for guaranteed civilizational collapse. It is the Weekly Worldview. I am Doug McBurney, and if you think I'm buying any of this, well, it's obvious I'm not buying any of this. Slaves to the court saying we can murder people. Boys can marry boys. Trannies can be in the bathroom with your kids. Please, I'm not buying it. Meanwhile, while this is going on, we reach deep into the freak show file. Because while the south side of Chicago, the streets are running with blood, Washington, D.C. is burning, Los Angeles, New York, Baltimore, Houston, Dallas, Denver, Colorado, the streets are running with blood and violence and hatred and loathing. While all that is going on, the Justice Department rears its ugly head from Washington, D.C. The Justice Department, according to The Blaze, has released a new video explaining to law enforcement the proper way to handle encounters with trannies. The Blaze calls them transgender people because The Blaze is very tolerant of such deviant perverts. But we just call them trannies here at the Weekly Worldview because we hold them in derision and pity because they're mentally deranged. So we feel sorry for them, but we will not tolerate their acceptance as normal. No, we will not. So we just call them trannies, and the Justice Department has released a 12-minute tranny training video for the police. They show the cops how they should address transgender people and what they should do if they're called to a bathroom situation. So if you're black in the south side of Chicago, you walk down the street, you get shot. And what is the Justice Department focused on? How to address a tranny in a bathroom. Do I even want to go through? They go through a bunch of scenarios on the video. In one of the scenarios, an officer refers to a tranny by an unpreferred pronoun, which is a crime in and of itself. The officer's partner pulls him aside and corrects his behavior. Yeah. The officer then apologizes for referring to the tranny as a man and acknowledging that the tranny prefers a female pronoun, at which point everybody busts out laughing because they can't believe how ridiculous this is. Are you kidding me? If the streets were not running in blood, this would be funny. But it's just not funny. The video gives proper terminology to explain assigned sex, sexual orientation, and gender identity. And now listen to this. We have a quote from, who is this person? Who would actually, someone from the DOJ says, transgender people are just trying to be their true selves and live their lives as members of our community just like anyone else. Really? Well, if they were living just like anyone else, they wouldn't be trannies. Right? I mean, by definition, they're not living like everybody else. Okay? So do you think, I'm not buying it. I'm not buying that. I'm not going to let you get by with that. And why does The Blaze at the end of the article have to justify trannies? Well, they're just like everybody else, you know. Golly. I'll bet if you interviewed 100 trannies, 99 of them would say, I'm not like everybody else. I mean, it's obvious. I'm sitting here with a 5 o'clock shadow, lipstick, and a dress. I'm not like everybody else. So please stop insisting that they're just like everybody else. Now, a report from the New York Post, legalized pot is making the lower class poorer and less responsible. There are now 25 states that permit the legal use of marijuana. And while it was the liberal elites that pushed for the legalization, George Soros, and who's that other faggot here in Colorado? Tim Gill, all you rich white guys who pushed for this, well, guess what? It's the poor people who are smoking dope and losing their jobs. The middle and upper classes have been the ones pushing for decriminalization, says the Post, and they have also tried to demolish the cultural taboo against smoking pot, but they themselves have chosen not to partake very much. But the poor, who already have a hard time holding down jobs and taking care of their families, are more frequently using a drug that makes it harder for them to focus, to remember things, and to behave responsibly. So thank you, George Soros and Tim Gill, for hurting the poor by giving them drugs. You evil, wicked, filthy men. You should be arrested and tried, put on trial for what you've done. And here's where this leads, folks. When you throw off the law, when you throw off God and his instructions and you say he doesn't exist, well, let's just go to the Philippines where the president there is having people killed publicly. About 2,000 people have been killed since he was elected. He won in a landslide, saying that he was going to promise to kill tens of thousands of criminals who he said are drug dealers in order to prevent the Philippines from becoming a narco state. The people in the Philippines are so terrified of crime in the streets that they elected a guy who said, look, I'm just going to start killing people. And he's doing it. And in fact, he's encouraging other people. The police chief there last Friday in a speech urged drug users to kill their dealers and burn down their houses. Well, the United Nations is freaking out. The people in the Philippines love this guy because he hasn't killed them yet. But here's the thing. When criminality is determined to be tolerable by a people, eventually those same people who said that they wanted to throw off the law, eventually they will endorse and elect a dictator to reestablish law and order, because eventually all that criminality comes to your house, starts consuming your family. And the same thing is happening here in America, ladies and gentlemen. We have thrown off the law because we said we don't want to be restrained by the law. And so the criminality eventually is going to start devouring us until we all become so scared that we're going to elect someone who will actually just start killing people. And it'll just be, well, it'll be the age of the Caesars once again. And I think it's upon us, no matter who wins the White House, by the way. This has nothing to do with the relatively unimportant election of 2016. What do you think in eternity, when we look back on the 7,000 or 8,000 years of human history, how important do you think the election of 2016 in the United States of America, how important do you think that will be on the whole plane of events of human history? Huh? It's a pimple is what it is. And you people who tell me I have to sacrifice and suspend the fundamental truths that God has revealed, I need to suspend those to vote for either Hillary Clinton or the other guy with the New York accent. You people who tell me I have to abandon God's principles to vote for one of these two scumbags, well, you're just mentally deranged. You know what? You're not mentally deranged. You're fools, and you're not even worthy of me expelling any more CO2 on you. Let's see. I'm almost out of time now. I've talked myself right almost out of time. Was there anything else important that I wanted to get to? My goodness. Well, there's so much here. I'll just take them in order. The Burkini. I have not understood this story. France's highest court suspended a ban on Burkini swimsuits. Have you seen these? He said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. It's a burqa, but it looks like, you know, if you wrapped a woman in burlap and leather straps from head to toe and then put her on the beach and told her to get in the water, and she looked at you and said, are you crazy? I'm going to get in the water in this? Anyway, the Muslims in Europe, they're offended by the Europeans walking around half naked on the beach. Okay, which I've always found somewhat uncomfortable, by the way, just so you know. I find that somewhat uncomfortable that women are walking around like that, okay? It makes me uncomfortable. Right. Of course, in my younger days, I didn't care because I wanted to throw off the law and I wanted to be unrestrained and I wanted to be free. But I'm older now and I'm no longer a foolish child. And I don't want my daughters walking around in such attire. I don't care if they're at the beach or whatever. I don't want them. I don't like it. OK. Makes me uncomfortable. So the Muslims, they now wrap their women in burlap from head to toe and tell them they've got to go to the beach that way. So the French have banned the burkini. They've passed a law against these things, saying that this is Islamism, and they don't want it in Europe. And after all, the Europeans have been getting blown up and shot by Islamists. So how do they respond? They ban the burkini. So anyone who thinks there's not a clash of civilizations happening right now on a monumental scale is a fool or just not paying attention. Because it's obvious right there in this Burkini story. I finally think I figured out how to... At first, I just didn't understand it. But the secularists in Europe, they insist on stripping women down to a bikini in public. The women themselves insist that they should strip to almost nothing and walk around in front of God and everybody. Well, the Islamists, they want to cover their women in burlap and leather straps. Well, they're both wrong. Okay? Both sides are wrong. This is why there is a civilizational war coming. And this is why the soldiers of both sides will clog the gates of hell. Because it's going to be secularists versus Islamists, and they're both wrong. They're both wicked. They're liars. They're evil. They're sexually immoral, and they're corrupt. And that's why there is that's why this clash of civilizations will not work itself out, unless it were to be somehow restrained, constrained, and otherwise directed by Christian love. Because it is only Christian love that will stop the blood running in the streets of the South Side of Chicago. It is only Christian love that is going to convince people that they shouldn't walk around half naked, or that they shouldn't wrap their women in burlap and leather. I mean, there is an answer. There is an answer, and it's in the person of Jesus Christ, and it's in the message that he brought, and it's in the love that he has made extant upon the planet, although it is slowly being snuffed out as the secularists and the Islamists and the homosexualists push the Christians into the closet and force that light under that bushel basket. And when that light is extinguished, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you, it shall get very dark. Very dark. But that light is still extant on the planet. And in fact, let's close with this in from the Science File, Ambra. Australia researchers have revealed the inner workings of a group of proteins that help switch critical genes on and off during blood cell production, which the university said last week may lead to the development of new and improved cancer drugs. One of the proteins involved is linked to breast cancer, the most common cancer for women in America. Existing breast cancer treatments do not target this protein specifically, but they're figuring out ways. Folks, the immune system of the human body is miraculous. It's obviously created by an intelligence far beyond anything we can conceive of. And if we can hold our civilization together, we are on the verge of curing diseases that were thought to be incurable, of curing cancers that are the scourge of our planet. We're almost there, folks, because we're looking so closely now at the mechanisms that God put in place to heal and cure our bodies that we're on the brink of something fantastic. If we can hold our civilization together, and that will only happen if some sane men will stand up athwart history and say, enough. We are not going to buy this anymore. You people are insane. We are going to opt out of your insanity, and we'll leave you to ourselves. But as for me and my house, we will follow the Lord. So that's the Weekly Worldview this week. I'm sorry if it turned into a bit of a sermon, but that's where I'm at. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com. I want to thank my friends at American Right to Life, and of course my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here at the Weekly Worldview, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. May the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.